the Shore Shame Podcast, shining a light to the nations.
Shalom, everyone. This is Bill Cloud, and this is our Torah tidbit taken from the Torah portion called Noach. Noach, of course, is the preacher of righteousness, as Peter called him, who was, in God's eyes, the only one worthy to escape the destruction that was to come upon the earth in that day. The portion begins in Genesis chapter 6, verse 9. This is the genealogy of Noach. Noach was a just man, perfect in his generations. Noach walked with God. And then it goes on down to verse 11 and says, "The earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. So God looked upon the earth, and indeed it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way on the earth." And so I know that everyone's familiar with this story, but what we see is because of the wickedness of mankind, precipitated by the mixing and the mingling of what was holy with what was profane, evidenced by the fact that the sons of God took wives of the daughters of men, God determined to blot out all the inhabitants of the earth, including beast and fowl. Because mankind had corrupted his way, the earth also became corrupt. In other words, man's actions and his disobedience somehow or the other had a direct influence upon the ground upon which he walked. His corruption affected the animal kingdom as well, apparently. And as a result of his disobedience and wickedness, the earth was filled with violence. And by the way, in Hebrew, that word is Hamas. Now, it's believed that long before Noah, righteous men understood that the Creator was committed to bringing the evil that had been prevalent in their world to an end, to judge it. In fact, the historian Josephus recorded that Adam had predicted the destruction of the world by a flood of waters and by fire. Perhaps this knowledge and the fact that the ground had already been cursed by God with the fall of Adam, maybe that explains why Noah's father, Lamech, decided to name him Noah, indicating that he would bring rest or comfort, because that's the actual meaning of his name. Now, here's another interesting thing to consider, though it has very little to do with our main point today. The genealogical record in Genesis chapter 5 seems to indicate that Noah was born in what would have been the year 1056, that is, counting from Adam. But for a lot of reasons, I believe there is a possibility that he may have been born in the year 1058. And here's why I'm even bringing this up. Because written in Hebrew, that year 1058 is, from right to left, Aleph Nun Chet. And if you look at this from right to left, you see that the last two letters in this Hebrew rendering of 1058 is actually the spelling for the name Noah. Now, I'm bringing this out only to underscore the notion that Noah was a man of destiny, someone that the Creator had appointed to be an instrument of witness and salvation and responsibility. Underscoring that point is the rabbinical belief, and I want to repeat this, the rabbinical belief that the floodwaters were Noah's responsibility. The floodwaters are, in fact, called the waters of Noah in Isaiah 54, and it's therefore claimed by some apocryphal works that Noah had been content to protect his own righteousness by distancing himself from everybody else, insinuating that had he fulfilled his responsibility to that generation fully, the flood might not have happened. Now, while I don't necessarily agree that the flood is Noah's fault, it's mankind's fault, I do find merit in the argument that God's people are responsible for some of the events that come upon the earth, even some of the catastrophic events. And I do believe that God's people are the emphasis of God's word, and I do believe that there are some of God's people who would be quite content to distance themselves from the rest of culture entirely, claiming this would be how we set ourselves apart, and then leave the culture to ultimate destruction. There are some of God's people who think that this world deserves what it gets. However, taking this position in regard to the world flies in the face of everything Yeshua instructed us as it relates to being a light and as it relates to being His witnesses. Now, unfortunately, Noah's generation was exceptionally wicked, very evil, and Noah's generation was unrestrained in their corrupt behavior and lifestyle. And also, unfortunately, in that day and time, most of the sons of God had already given in to the temptation to mingle. In fact, Genesis 6 begins by telling us of how the sons of God corrupted themselves by joining with the daughters of men, and that led to the eventual corruption of the entire earth and consequently the flood. In short, those choosing to live according to God's standards of righteousness were in short supply in those days. Now, accentuating that point is the fact that only 8 people survived the deluge, and we're not even sure if all 8 of those people were righteous. In fact, it only says that of one man. And that brings us to this point, and we go to Hebrews chapter 11, verse 7, to see that by faith Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen, moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household, by which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. In other words, because of his faithful actions, because he believed God, his family was saved. Up until this point, nowhere are we told that his wife or his sons, not to mention their wives, were righteous. Apparently, the scripture seems to suggest that Noah alone was considered righteous. The text said that Noah was a just man and perfect in his generations and walked with God. The Hebrew word there, just, is tzaddik, literally righteous. The Hebrew word that is translated as perfect is tamim, which means undefiled. In other words, Noah didn't mix with the culture in the same way as the other sons of God did. That Noah walked with God infers that he walked the straight and narrow path, that is, the one way that leads to life. So again, it doesn't say that Noah and his family found grace or that all 8 of them were just and undefiled. To the contrary, it seems to say that his family was spared because of his righteousness. Now, as you consider that, consider Lot and his family, how they were spared or could have been spared because of Abraham's righteousness. Consider the firstborn of Israel in the land of Egypt and how the firstborn were saved because their father was obedient to place the blood of a lamb upon the door in accordance with God's instructions. Now, I'm bringing all this out because I want you to consider this exchange between Paul and Silas and the Philippian jailer in Acts chapter 16. And he brought them out and said, "Sirs, what must I do to be saved?" And so they said, "Believe on the Lord Yeshua the Messiah, and you will be saved." And we want to underscore and emphasize this, "you and your household." And so that verse seems to validate the perception that I have, and perhaps you, that when God finds one who is righteous and faithful, like Noah, their entire family can be saved. And so the story of Noah, and others as well, demonstrates the ripple effect of our disobedience, think of the sons of God in Genesis 6 here, and God's faithfulness to us and to our family when we are obedient. So when it says in Genesis 6, verse 9, that these are the generations of Noah, the Hebrew term that is translated generations can also mean offspring or even history. In other words, even though we know that Noah had 3 sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, the greatest offspring any man could have is the spiritual fruit he bears. That is the result of his faith and his action. In Noah's actions, mirrored in his 3 sons, we see good and bad, the best and the worst. However, the lingering fruit of Noah's life and his actions is that a people were saved in the midst of destruction. Because Noah feared God and walked with God instead of mingling with the culture, his entire household was saved. Now, that's important, but we could also say that his greatest testimony is to those generations of people who followed, that is, people he never knew. Or let's put it this way, how many of us living today are thankful for Noah's obedience? The answer should be all of us. If we're breathing, it's an indirect result of Noah's walk with God. Now, considering that he was a preacher of righteousness, if we were to measure his success in terms of how many people boarded the ark, we'd have to say that he was a miserable failure, at least in the way that modern church culture measures success. But if we consider the long-term ramifications and that his obedience saved the world, his success knows no bounds. And that's incredibly important for us to consider. It's pretty incredible when you think about it, and that is why Noah should be considered a man of destiny. Still, to be that man of destiny, it was incumbent upon Noah to set himself apart, not isolate himself, mind you, but to live a set apart life, even among those he lived among. And because he did that, he also serves as an example of the fact that God always has a remnant. Those who have determined to follow him in spite of the pressure that is being placed upon them by the world in which they live. Those who will be a preacher of righteousness, even as the ark is being prepared, so to speak. Because of his commitment to God's standards and purposes, it says of Noah that he found grace in the eyes of the Lord. From the beginning, we see that there has always been a remnant. There's always been those people, that person. God never brings judgment or destruction before having positioned that person or that people, willing to serve him to the fullest. And this is critical for you and I to internalize because Messiah warned us that the days before his coming would be like the days of Noah and the days before the flood. Perhaps then, we should take something from Noah's example. We should take into account that if we desire to be a people of destiny, and if we wish to be among God's remnant, perhaps we should follow the example of Noah and be regarded as perfect in our generations. As I said earlier, the word perfect is the Hebrew tamim, and is considered to be a word that means lacking nothing or to be whole. A New Testament concept that would be equivalent to tamim or perfect is found in Paul's letter to Ephesus. Speaking of Messiah's commitment to the body, he said it was so he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word, that he might present her to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish. You see, ladies and gentlemen, this is what is required if we are going to be those who walk with God, and consequently, those who find grace in the eyes of the Lord. This is what is required if we're going to be part of that remnant, and if we are going to be people of destiny. Because you see, we are witnessing the same trends in culture as did Noah. That is the promotion of mixing clean with unclean, holy and profane. So then, like Noah, we are to remain unpolluted, set apart, and to walk upright before God. Because if we are living in the days of Noah, we see that he did not spare the wicked of that time, and he won't spare the wicked of this time. But if we are found to be just and perfect, like Noah, he will deliver us, even though we live in the midst of corruption, as Peter wrote for us in 2 Peter chapter 2. For if God did not spare the ancient world, but saved Noah, one of eight people, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood on the world of the ungodly, then the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptations and to reserve the unjust under punishment for the day of judgment. And so with that, ladies and gentlemen, I want to encourage you to learn from Noah and to be found those people who are just and upright so that we can fulfill our appointment with destiny. Well, that's it for this week's Torah Tidbit. Thank you for joining me. Until next time, shalom.
Like what you're hearing? Become a Bill Cloud Premium Partner to watch or listen to hundreds of hours of teachings and resources on demand. Go to BillCloud.com/subscribe to start watching today.